Hey, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Interview. Today we have a fabulous film called Gutterbug. The director, Andrew Gibson's in the house. He decided to spend some time. Thank you for coming on. By these characters. How did you get these characters to seem so real?
Well, honestly, the casting, we really lucked out with the casting. Andrew Yackel, Hannah Muscada, and Justin Pietropaolo, they were all our top choices, and you know, we were able to chat with them all before having them sign on to the film, and they totally got what we were trying to do, and we're really excited about playing those kind of characters. And they definitely did their research and their work because they really came off as really authentic and couldn't be happier with their performances.
So did you have Hannah shave her head for the role? Was she shaved before she came in?
We actually lucked out. She was on a show, on a shoot, a movie before that, and they shaved her head for that movie. And she hit us up like a week before coming to Gutterbug. And she's like, "Hey, just so you know, they just shaved my head on this shoot, so I hope that's okay." And we were like, "Oh, that's actually sick! Like that'll totally work." Because we were thinking about doing something like dyeing her hair or doing something. I don't think we had thought of that, but that was like perfect, and it was a happy coincidence.
Now, your character spent a lot of time outdoors for most of the film, I would say.
Yeah.
Now, did you let them wash at all? Because they seemed dirty all the time.
Yeah, well, actually, Andrew Yackel didn't shower the whole shoot, the whole 17 days. So I think some of the other characters did, but he was actually dirty the whole time.
Okay, because he looks it. I think, like I said he looks authentic to me the whole period.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, costuming, again, like you have perfect costumes for these people, I would say, what I've expected from everything. So where did all that come from?
That came from, there was this vintage store in the neighborhood that we shot the film on in Alston, Massachusetts, this vintage store called Vivant Vintage. And I was friends with the owner of the vintage store and asked him to do the costumes for the film, and he was down, and he did an amazing job. And most of those costumes he sourced like specifically for the film, and then he dirtied them all up. Like had this big process in his backyard where he had these 10-gallon buckets full of like coffee grinds and water, and like basically made dirt out of like this little concoction of dirt, and like made the costumes all dirty, and he did a lot of custom work to make those costumes look natural and worn out and broken in.
I also want to go from there. When you were doing locations for your film, you seem to have, even though the film is very dark and dirty at times, I would say, but you have vibrant colors in the background.
Yeah, the locations we shot it all within like most of it except for the jail and hospital and car scene stuff in the house, the parents' house stuff. Those scenes were shot around Boston, but most of the scene was shot in Alston, which is a little neighborhood of Boston. So I had been living in that neighborhood for about 3 years before we made the film, and our cinematographer, T. Acton Fitzgerald, had also been living in the same neighborhood, so we lived in the same neighborhood. So we had seen all those locations and had talked a lot about the different locations we wanted to shoot in. So we definitely made the most of what we had around us, but at the same time, we were also lucky that like that neighborhood that we were living in was a really vibrant, cool, colorful, exciting neighborhood.
Well, since we're already on locations, we can get a little bit more deeper. You have a liquor store location I want to go over, a convenience store, the hospital, the jail, and the house. Yeah. So how did you get all those? Just break it down one at a time would be great.
So the liquor store is a liquor store in Alston, and I was going there frequently and was friendly with the owner, so he let us shoot there for free. The convenience store was in my neighborhood, and I was going there all the time, and they let us shoot there. And then the parents' house was our co-writer, Chris Tobin's, his parents' house in Swampscott, or his mom's house in Swampscott. And the jail, we had my friend Josh Uman is a locations manager for like feature films, and he hooked us up with that one. And also with the hospital one, Alex Berard, a locations manager/scout in Boston, hooked us up with that hospital. So we had some favors from friends in the industry and also some neighborhood hookups.
I also want to discuss The Last. You have a big scene at the beginning of the film involving a fire truck, an ambulance, and a car crash. I don't think I'm ruining anything. Yeah. How was that to film? I mean, that is a big set.
Yeah, it was. It was. I'm glad that you noticed that because, you know, we made the film for very cheap, and it really was a true indie DIY film, you know? So to pull that off, I think was like one of my favorite parts and really adds a lot of production value. My producer, Tim Haber and Alex Berard, coordinated all that. We shot it in Brockton at an intersection. We shot it at like 4 a.m, I think. So, you know, there's no one on the streets and we were able to shut that down. The city, we were working with the police in the city and they shut down the intersection and are also the cop cars that were in the shoot. And then the ambulance was just like a local ambulance company. I forget what company it was, but they were like in the neighborhood and we ended up like doing all our staging and all our, parking in the parking lot of the ambulance company. And they were like, everyone was just so down. Like everyone in that little town of Brockton just like was excited to help us out and make a movie, which was like so cool.
Now, I just meant that you're a very small indie doctor. I mean, you do not spend a lot of locations and things. Was there a big cost for that scene, or they just said, here you go, you can use this stuff?
That scene, there was a cost for, more so than the other ones, because we did have to pay for the police officers. We did have to pay for the ambulance and the paramedic. So, like, all that stuff we had to pay for. But there was no – I don't believe that the city, like, charged us a permit fee or anything like that. They were more just like, yeah, you guys can do this. You have to do it in the middle of the night when there's no people and you have to pay our police officers and our ambulance workers and, you know, all the city people that are going to help make this thing happen. And then also a towing company. There was a towing company that smashed up the car and they were like – I think they ended up doing it for cheap or free – just so they can get their tow truck in the shop.
Of course.
That was a cool little town there, Brockton. Everyone there was really cool.
I don't want to forget about the record store because I think he'll be mad at us if we leave him out.
True. The record store was a record store, Looney Tunes Records in Alston. It's a cool little basement record store, which is also across from the rock and roll venue that we shot at O'Brien's. So we shot those two in the same day and we're able to shoot in the record store and we went across the street and shot in the rock shop. Both cool little locally owned record store and also music venue.
Let's discuss O'Brien's for a bit. That is an awesome place to see a band.
Dude, you've been there?
No, but I want to go.
Okay, yeah, it's dope. It's awesome. It's like the best venue in Alston and it's a great place. They have the Alston Happy Meal, which is I don't want to mess this up, but it's you get a Miller High Life, a shot of whiskey, and a hot dog for $10.
I love it.
Yeah, on a good night, my co-writer Chris Tobin would have two Alston Happy Meals. He'd have one when we got to the venue, have a couple beers, see a couple bands, and then you have another one, you know, as the nightcap before we left. So
the bands you were filming are real bands?
Real bands, yep. The first band is Pink Suds in the first rock and roll scene, and then the second band is Nice Guys, who are also wrote that song for the movie. So they lived in the neighborhood, and I was good friends with them, and you know was talking about being in the movie, and then they were also like, oh yeah, we have some new songs we're working on, and they played me some of them. And that one, I was like, oh, this would be the perfect song for this one scene that we want to do. And then they ended up making it into a song and playing it in the movie. So it was really cool to have them like be so down for the whole experience.
I got to say, I love the music in your film. But I mean, I'm a big fan.
Awesome.
I love punk music. This is my kind of music.
Cool.
Good choices. I will give you full out. This is a good time to tell everybody all about the music, if you would like.
Nice Guys, Pink Suds, Black Beach, Gorilla Toss, Beef, Sarah Greenwell, Date Night. I hope I'm not forgetting anyone. But yeah, they're all, most of them, and Modest Mouse is in there at the end. But aside from Modest Mouse, all those bands are kind of from that Alston Austin rock scene. Some of them have, I mean, Cult Fiction also, some of them are no longer bands. Some of them have moved on to different cities, but you know, at the time we were making it, they were all local bands. So it's pretty cool to have a whole soundtrack full of local music, with the exception of Modest Mouse.
So I have a question. When you were filming that scene, how did you get everybody look alike? Or did you just say, hey, we need a bunch of people? This is the crowd that normally comes?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we, you know, all the people all the extras that showed up for that scene were friends of either, you know, the film or of the band or both. I mean, it's that whole little area. Alston is a very rock and roll neighborhood, and a lot of artists and musicians and filmmakers in that neighborhood. So it was really just a lot of our friends. So everyone kind of had that look. And then we also had an awesome, you know, the awesome costume designer, Justin Palmerlow, and then awesome hair and makeup, Emily Matuin. So between the, you know, everyone showed up with cool stuff, but then also they were given some clothes if they needed it. And then they were also dirtied up by our hair and makeup person to really get the grime, the grit and the grime.
So I want to discuss a line in the film. The goal of the mosh pit is to get to the front.
Yeah.
Is that a personal motto, or is that just the way you feel?
That was how I felt when I was going into mosh pits. I remember when I was going into punk shows and moshing and stuff, if it was a packed show, like a really packed show, for me, I would always go into the mosh pit so that I could get to the front. Because it was like, if you got to a show and it was packed and you're in the back and you can't see anything, and there's like, you can't see all the craziness and all the action, then as soon as the mosh pit broke out, I would go into the mosh and work my way to the front. And then, like, next thing you know, you're front row. And then, yeah, you're going to get smashed and you're going to get run into for the whole set. But it was always kind of my way of, like, weaseling my way to the front.
Hey, I'm totally with you. Being a hardcore Tool fan, I totally understand.
Yeah. Because you could get to a show late and it'd already be packed, but it wouldn't be a big deal because you could get into the mosh pit and work your way to the front.
Oh, absolutely. I'm 100% on board with you. I just got to ask these questions.
Yeah.
You do a lot of shooting in a park, tons of shooting in a park. Now, I love the scene with the ducks. I thought that was very nice. I did not expect Bug to do that.
Yeah.
And I thought that gave him some humanity for later in the film.
Totally. That was totally the point of that scene. Yeah. That's a cool little area, a cool little park near the Charles River. I mean, you know, obviously some of the outdoor shooting is because we could shoot at these locations for free, but also because a lot of, you know, the crust punks and homeless people living this lifestyle are living outside, you know. So it just worked out to shoot in a lot of parks and locations like that. And that area with the ducks is, like, notorious. It's by the Boston University Bridge. It's like, a notorious spot for – there's tons of ducks there all the time. So I had been there a couple times, and at some point we were like, oh, we should have Bug feed the ducks. And that was like a really small, I think it was just like me and the DP and Bug and Hannah, like only four or five of us went down and did that as kind of like a second unit, kind of B-roll style shoot. And I think it was in the script, but I think it was also something that like, let's just go shoot this and see if we can fit it in somewhere.
Now I do want to discuss the bathing in the water scene.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
That was legit.
When was that done?
That was legit. That was done the first day, dude. Yeah, the actor got there. Well, he had been there for a couple of days, but that was the first day of shooting. And it was at the end. It was the last thing we did on that day. And it was like 90 degrees in August in Alston. And everyone was exhausted. He was exhausted and sweaty. But it was also in the script. And I had brought him to that point when we were location scouting when he first got there. And showed it to him. I was like, yeah, this is where we want you to go in the water. And he was like so down. And now he was from Pittsburgh. Anyone in Boston knows that you don't go swimming in the Charles River. Like, it's notorious. You know, the song Dirty Water by the Shandells.
Great
like about
song.
How gross. Yeah, it's like about how gross the Charles River is. But like, he didn't know that. Even if he knew that, he probably would have been down. But like, he was very down to do it. So he just went for it. And we just rolled the cameras and yeah, that's one of my favorite scenes too. It's funny, people from Boston see that. They're like, dude, did he really go into the Charles River? We're like, yeah, it's legit.
But I could see his character doing that.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And also to give Bug humanity, you do have him do a scene to help the guy with his bottles.
Right. Yep. And yep. that was the exact same intent as the feeding the duck scene, you know, to show his humanity and to show his good side, you know, to have a character that, you know, is just a well-rounded character. We didn't want people to not like him, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, Bugs' friend we're not supposed to like, I assume. Slim, maybe? Right.
Yeah.
And yes. Hannah, we're really, I would say most, would you plan on the viewers to be mixed on? Because I don't know if we really like her or don't like her. I don't think we get enough of Hannah to know.
I think the intent was that you, like, she's good and Slim is evil and Bug is in the middle.
Yes.
And he's being pulled in both directions. So, yeah, I think the viewer is supposed to like Hannah. But you know, I think it's definitely not as clear as, like, you know, how much you're supposed to hate Slim.
Okay, perfect. So I'm feeling what I'm supposed to be feeling. You have a scene where Bug is begging for change on a median.
Yeah.
Did people know it was a film or no?
No, they didn't. I mean, we were far away. We had a really long lens. I forget what zoom lens we had, but it was a really long zoom lens. So we were, like, really far away. But we were still on the median. So I think there's probably a bunch. I'm sure people did see us and what was going on. But I think there was also a lot of people that didn't really see us when they first drove by and actually did. Like, the people that gave him change in water was totally organic. And, like, even if people did see us filming him, I think they might have still assumed that we were filming this homeless kid, not, like, someone that's acting in a movie.
So did extras, I mean, people, random people walking by, think he was homeless?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And did you have issues on that line at any time? Like, store owners maybe, or just people in general saying, go away?
Not really. We had, there's one scene when he's on the bridge, on the bridge, and he's, like, hassling one of our producers, Tim Haber, for a cigarette.
Yes.
Before, when we were filming that scene, some people were walking by and riding by, and he was in character. He was saying shit to people, and a couple of people, I think, were a little bit thrown off, or, like, were kind of confused by it, but nothing too serious, no.
Now, would you argue at times Bug has mentally challenged? Because, I mean, Tim, he does ask for a cigarette. Tim gives him a cigarette.
Right, right.
And then he gives him crap.
Right.
So I always feel that Bug's in a conflict of faith. Like, should I be nice? Should I not be nice? Am I going to eat today? Should I eat?
Right, right. Yeah, well, I mean, we definitely wanted, you know, from the start, his character definitely suffers from mental illness. I mean, in the script, at one point, it was really, like, really clear that he was bipolar, but then we kind of dialed it back and made it more subtle. But we definitely wanted him to be struggling with mental illness, and then also just, you know, that's just magnitude. It's just amplified when you're on the streets and you're stripped down to, you know, your most primal instincts. And that's, we really wanted Bug to be, like, really stripped down to his most primal instincts as a human, and then also on top of that, having to deal with mental illness and drug addiction.
So you have a scene where Bug's in piles of garbage with a turned over shopping cart on the side.
Yeah.
Now, was that set up or was that something you found?
The alley was how we found it. I mean, we had scouted that alley. I think we might have tipped over the shopping cart, but it's definitely, like, a gnarly alley. And then we just planted a pizza box in the garbage can. So that was, like, a fresh piece of pizza. Well, I don't know about fresh. It might have been from, like, craft services the night before, but it wasn't an actual trash pizza.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I also want to discuss the spray painting scene.
Yep.
You got away with that one?
Yeah, we did. I mean, you know, that we actually ended up getting kicked out of that location not long after. Well, I think we had filmed a couple scenes in that location, but then we ended up getting kicked out of that location. But, you know, it's under an overpass and it's kind of a hidden spot. It's kind of a gnarly, it's actually a very gnarly spot. It was a little sketchy being down there. But yeah, they were legit spray painting. It was legit. I mean, I wish it felt weird spray painting over, like, there was some other cool graffiti down there, but I hope we didn't damage anyone's pieces too bad.
No, I don't think you did. You look very respectful because I didn't notice. You do a beautiful graffiti shot. When you back up and you do a long lens shot, a wide angle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like I said, I do think you make your world, maybe this was your plan, to make your world bigger than it is.
Yeah, totally.
Because I definitely felt Bug's world is huge.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you take him over overpasses. We do the bottle store. We do the convenience. He always seems to be traveling.
Yep.
Now, I guess my question is, how big is the actual area you filmed in? Because it seems big, it's but small. I can't see it big.
It's small. Yeah, totally. I mean, we used, like, all the cool locations. There's a lot of cool locations in Austin. I think we used a majority of them. But, you know, our base camp, it was at my apartment, and we shot pretty much everything within like a 2 mile radius of my apartment. So for like the first couple of weeks, we were just going from location to location, either walking or in, you know, vans and cars. So everything was actually really contained. Like, people that are from the area that know the area know how close all that stuff is, even though maybe it does seem further away in the film.
You do have a shot in a cemetery. Again, no issues with that?
No, we actually got permission to do that, though. We talked with the people that the historic society that operates the cemetery, the Newton Historical Society, and they were cool with it, and they let us shoot there, and they had someone from their staff hanging out with us all day while we shot there. So that was really cool. And that's a really, really cool cemetery, too.
We do have Bug's parents show up at one point throughout the film.
Yep.
And they're looking for their child. It seems it's Bug's birthday. Bug even mentions it's his birthday.
Yeah.
Now, does this happen often that parents go looking for their children on their birthdays?
The birthday thing is definitely something that we did, you know, to make the narrative, to help the narrative and add drama. So, I mean, but I would assume so. I mean, I definitely know that parents, I've heard stories of parents going out and looking for their kids on the streets and stuff like that. The birthday thing, I think, obviously amplifies that and was kind of what tied our whole film together. So that was, you know, put in there as a plot device. But I don't know. I would assume that that's probably been done.
Now, we're getting close to the end. You know where I'm at. Your film, like, ramps from, like, 0 to 100 in about, I don't know, 2 minutes?
Yeah.
How do audience react to that?
It's been polarizing. I think it's been a mix. I think that some people, I mean, seeing it, we did some theater runs. We had like probably 7 or 8 screenings at festivals, and me and Chris watched the first one at IFFB, and the reaction to that, the scene that you're referencing, or the sequence of scenes you're referencing, but the one part in particular, was incredible. It was like a mix of like gasps and laughs, and like it was just like a really visceral reaction. And then the screenings after that, we were sick of the movie, so we wouldn't watch the movie. We just like go around the corner and get a bite to eat or something, and come back. But we would usually time it so we'd come back for that scene just to see people's reactions, and that was like always a highlight, was seeing people's reactions. So, you know, I think some people, I mean, I think either way it gets a reaction. I think some people think it's a little too much, and I don't blame them for that. Like, I think that it's definitely a polarizing scene for sure. We've heard both sides of it.
People have told you it's too much.
Or out of tone. I think out of tone is some of the things that I've heard.
Well, I don't.
Or that maybe it's just a little, like, I mean, I think that the shock value and the fact that it's like over the top is like really like shocks people. And I like that. Like, I think that's one of the things I like about film is that you can give people that reaction.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. What did they expect the payoff of the movie to be?
What's that?
I mean, you've built the characters to go in this direction. The whole film, true, you're building towards this, I would argue.
Right, right.
I mean, because we don't meet the parents until about halfway through, I'm guessing, I think.
Yeah, it's actually the exact halfway
through. Okay, there you go. And, I mean, Bug is talking about it. You can see Bug in his head trying to find redemption at times.
Right.
So this all made sense to me. I can't believe people would say that to you. I think that's very strange.
Well, I don't know if it's tough to not. I don't want to give any spoilers because I do think that it's great if you don't know it's coming. But there, I think that one moment in particular, like, is it's definitely I can see how people can think of that one moment in particular could be a stretch. But I think that, like, there's a bunch of movies that I like that I've seen that have moments like that. very similar moments, actually, that is always what I remember. You know, I'm always like, oh, that one scene was fucking insane, you know? So I think that, like, I think it's just a little bit of an insane moment for, like, some people think it's just, like, a low-budget indie drama, and then that moment happens, and people are like, whoa, this is, like, a moment that you might see in, like, a Tarantino film or something, not in a little indie drama. So I think that's sometimes where people are a little taken out of it by that moment, but...
I could see that, but I like it. It pays off by the end. I'm going to say that.
Right.
I don't think
right.
I've ruined anything. I think we pay off by the end of the film.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think you need those scenes to get to where we end up.
Yeah. I mean, I love it. I love it. Okay. I love that 5 minutes of the film. It's like, that was like the funnest part to write and also to make and to edit. And it's just like a really adrenaline packed 5 minutes, you know?
Okay. Are you ready for some fun questions?
Sure.
I think I developed your film pretty good without even saying a word about it.
I think we did a good job, man. I honestly do. I don't think we gave anything away, and I think that we talked about some cool stuff. So
okay, good. As long as you're happy. Your favorite film?
Absolutely. My favorite film of all time?
Yep.
Oh, man. It really put me on the spot right now. Can I say my top three?
Of course you can.
Okay. I'll say three just because it's tough to say which is the one, but I would say in no particular order, Gummo, Boogie Nights, and The Shining are probably the three. Sorry. That, like...
What's the first one you said?
Gummo.
I don't know what that is.
It's a movie by Harmony Korine. It's the movie he made after they made Kids. Larry Clark directed Kids. Harmony Korine wrote it, and then Harmony Korine wrote and directed Gummo after. It was like his first directorial feature film. And it's wild.
I'm going to see it.
So anytime, yeah. So I feel like anytime I get asked that question, those are like, I usually say one of those three. Yeah.
Your favorite meal you had on set?
Oh, it has to be my good friend, Tyler Loring, strawberry cheesecake. He was our crafty guy, and he makes a really great strawberry cheesecake. Anyone that knows him knows this. And it was after a really long day of shooting. It was like really hot, and he surprised us all with his famous strawberry cheesecake, a little bit of vanilla ice cream on the side. I think it was probably like a Friday, too, after like a whole week. It was like he really came through and surprised us with that. So that was for sure number one.
Your last question is probably the hardest one, I think. What advice would you give new directors in making their first indie film?
I mean, there's a lot of stuff. I think a lot of it depends on what stage you're at in your filmmaking career, or your career as a director. Like if you've like up to that, before I made Gutterbug, I had made a bunch of music videos and short films, not a ton of short films, a lot of music videos, and really spend a lot of time figuring things out, you know? So I think by the time we were ready to make Gutterbug, I felt like I was ready to do it. So I think that if you're in a position where you feel like you are ready to do it, then I'd say go for it. And I think that, I guess the one advice once you do go for it is, make sure you get good sound. get a good sound guy and surround yourself with a good team. You need a lot of people. It's tough to do film on your own. So I would say get a really good crew and get a really good team around you, and make sure you get good sound.
Tell everybody, of course, where they can find your film.
You can watch it on Amazon, Amazon Prime or Apple TV. You can also order a DVD on Amazon, and we also have some VHS tapes. We've made a handful of VHS tapes, but they've sold out. But we have a new run of VHS tapes coming in a couple weeks from Retro Release Video. So really excited about those. And we also have a behind the scenes video. It's like an hour long documentary about the film that's coming out on August 28th. So keep an eye out for that, because that shows the whole process, the whole thing.
Thank you for your time and have a great evening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Later.